Now, On Point with Stuart Kaplan and Chris Pihota.
Chris, how you doing?
Great, Stuart. How are you this evening?
I am, to say the least, a little concerned about some of the things that have happened more recently. And you know, Chris, I'm going to say for this segment, in my mind, everything, at least from my perspective, is relating back to our children, to our kids that are fixated on their smart devices. They're immersed in social media. They're absorbing the craziness of what's going on in our world. And to some extent, their perspective is the actual optics of what is being portrayed and spoon-fed to them. Chris, last night, the LSU women's basketball team played Iowa's women's basketball team. Over 12 million people viewed that game. Just imagine that. It was the largest viewership to date, televised in connection with an NCAA game, a women's game. Over 12 million. Now, I'm not including, because quite frankly, I don't know the capacity of the stadium that people went to watch this basketball game. But I will assume there were at least 10,000 people and probably a lot more. And I would assume that if we take a look at the fans that went to watch this game, there were men and women and children of all ages. You know, I know, because you growing up were very involved in sports, as I was. And I never, ever would ever imagine that in this day and age, with everything that has happened, that Coach Kim Mulkey, the LSU women's basketball coach, would make a decision that would cause her team, the women that play for her, to remain in the locker room while the national anthem is being played, is being televised, is being played in the arena. How fucking dare that to be allowed to happen in this day and age? And just understand the implications, the optics to our children. Forget about you and I, because you and I, we can think for ourselves. We're basically set in our own ways. But our children are grasping, are drowning in all of this crap that is being fed to them. So, there are people that watched the national anthem being played, and clearly it was obvious that the LSU basketball team was nowhere to be found. And of course, the people that are in the arena clearly see and witness that the LSU basketball team hasn't come out for the national anthem. And to some people, their perspective or their understanding or interpretation or takeaway is that in some way, that's acceptable. That's acceptable behavior. Chris, You have a son who's in the armed forces. You know, I know. The bloodshed that has been shed across the world. And I always go back just for you and I to be able to have this podcast and to speak openly and without interruption and without the concerns of retribution. The national anthem is so important to what defines the United States of America. It is bigger than any one of us. And sports, I understand, it is important in our society. It allows people to gravitate, to find something to feel good about or something to root for. And I understand from the professional athlete's perspective or the collegiate athlete's perspective or even from the high school athlete's perspective or any athlete, it is an amazing opportunity to showcase your talent or your team's talent. But let me be clear. Not one of us nor any team is greater or more important than the national anthem for what it symbolizes, what it stands for. And I just cannot fucking believe that last night, this team, this coach, allowed her players to remain in the locker room.
Well, let me add just a little bit here, Stu. First of all, when you're looking at what happened with the LSU basketball team, to me, it's a symptom. It's a symptom of what's going on in our society right now. We make excuses for it, right? All you hear now is all the excuses coming from the coach about why they weren't there. None of them hold water. It's all nonsense. What I saw was a complete and total leadership failure on behalf of that coach. They take on these woke ideas that they're protesting against the country for whatever nonsensical reason they have to protest. And basically what we saw last night was a result of the poison mentality that is being pushed on all levels of schooling in our country right now, that America's bad, America's evil, America is, you know, it's not a good country. And it's just sickening to watch. And the fact that our kids, like you said earlier, they sit and they're just drowning and they're just smothered with this poison mentality in social media and school. Last night, to me, that was a symptom of all of that conditioning. It's just terrible.
But Chris, what is unimaginable to me, and you touched upon it, all these fucking excuses today where she's coming out and trying to make one fucking excuse after the other. What about the fucking people that are actually physically in the arena, from the television people to the on-court people to the security people to the academic people to the fans? Do you not think that no one thought to go and say, hey, you need to knock on the locker room door and get the LSU basketball team out here on the floor because we're about to play the national anthem? So that is why, and I know that's what fucking happened, but that fucking arrogant woman decided that for some reason she's got a greater existence or a greater calling in her fucking simple life to think that she's bigger and better and more important than the national anthem, because it is impossible that no one went running down the hall into the locker room area and said, hey, coach, we're getting ready to play the national anthem. You need to get your team out there on the on the court.
Tell him you got 30 seconds, right? Come trotting out here. Give her a 30-second warning. Didn't happen. And again, inexcusable. But what I also find is that these people create a sense of importance in that small little world of collegiate sports that they play. She's very important in that realm. So are some of the ladies who play. they're not more important than the national anthem of this country, the country that gives them the ability to play those sports, to be recognized for their ability, and to give them that forum to compete in. That our society gives them that. And they just turn around and crap on the society that gives them their privileges.
But my concern, Chris, is what are going to be the implications of how this is going to impact our kids? Look, there were kids there. They were physically in the arena. They saw it for themselves. There are kids watching at home. They see it for what it is. And this is the shaping of our American culture here in the United States that no one today even came forward to me. If I am the LSU president of that university, let me tell you, that woman, she's gone. Fired, terminated, dismissed. End of story. I come out on behalf of the LSU academic community, the sports community, and tell the world that that is behavior that's unacceptable, it's reprehensible, and I make sure our children understand why it is that we are being so heavy-handed to hold someone accountable. Because all of this bullshit that, oh, you know, we can take a knee because I have a right for freedom of expression. Listen, I have no fucking problem in your home, in your backyard. You know, you want to take a knee. You want to give your finger to the American flag. Fuck you. Do it in your home. But when you are out and there is children amongst us that are attending these type of events, just understand we are a product of our own environment. And what do you expect this generation? What is this generation going to stand for and understand what it is? I mean, Chris, I mean, I know we're going to get into, you know, this.
We have lots of good stuff.
And I know that. But
lots of good stuff.
But, you know, Chris, this is one of those sore spots for me.
Yeah.
I listen, you know, because you were in the FBI when 9/11 happened. I was in the FBI when 9/11 happened. I will say this publicly because no one knows this, and it is the first time I'm saying this. I, with another agent, was on a Coast Guard jet flying from Vero Beach down to Miami. I was one of the only planes in the air flying at that point because I was tasked with apprehending and flying Muhammad Atta, who is the main hijacker, his roommate who attended flight school with him, myself with another agent, apprehended him, threw him on a plane, and flew him to Miami so that he could then be picked up and processed through various channels and various agencies. I will never forget that day. And I will never forget that day because personally to me, I lost two very dear friends of mine. And I also understood how sobering it was that in modern times, we were attacked here domestically. It was an act of war. And how at that particular time, the country came together. It put aside its differences. And we came together. And I remember the flag. You couldn't find a car going down a road without waving a flag and the national anthem, and how we came together, embraced one another, and put our differences aside. And now, 20-odd years later, we have people that either will ignore the national anthem, take a knee during the national anthem, spit on our flag, degrade our flag. And my concern is our kids are processing all of this information, all of this garbage through social media, and they believe it's acceptable behavior.
Well, no one calls them out on it. Everybody tells them they have a right to do it. And having a right to do something doesn't mean that you should. Yeah, right. And here's the thing, Steve, you just gave me an idea for another show in the future. We should have a 9/11 talk. We should have a 9/11 day. talk about that, because I was right across the river in Newark, so we probably have some good stories to tell.
Yeah.
But yeah, the whole flag thing, it's a shame, and like you said, I think it's a symptom of what we have going on in the country, and until we as a society decide we're going to start liking ourselves again and being proud of ourselves again, this kind of nonsense is going to continue. It's kind of hip and fashionable to be anti-American right now, and I don't get it.
Yeah.
I'll close my part of the conversation with this. Did you ever see, going to movie wisdom, I call it, but going to the Mission Impossible series, Tom Cruise, Mission Impossible 3, the great Lawrence Fishburne, one of his lines, he said, I will bleed on the flag myself to make sure that its stripes stay red. And we're losing that generation of people. I come from that generation, so do you. And we're losing that, so it's kind of a shame. And I'll stop my part of it on that.
Yeah, no, and Chris, this bullshit that the flag is a political symbol. It's not a fucking political symbol. It symbolizes the bloodshed from the beginning of time that created the formation of the United States of America. And ladies and gentlemen, if you have never seen a fallen soldier, someone who has paid the ultimate sacrifice, and to understand that when that individual makes that ultimate sacrifice, that is a sacrifice that he is making on behalf of all of us, every single one of us in the United States of America. And that flag symbolizes that ultimate sacrifice and the bloodshed.
You know what, Stu? It symbolizes what our country was, used to be, and what it could be again, right? It's an ideal. The flag is an ideal. What I find is that it's kind of confusing that when people say it's now a political symbol and that it offends people, it's offensive to people. The American flag makes them uncomfortable. And I'm thinking, all right, you know, I think we've reached a point of nonsense that it's just no longer workable. What about this issue in New York where the FDNY was forced to remove a United States flag that had the thin red line on it, which is the remembrance of the, you know, fallen firefighters. And they had this at the, was it Ladder Company 11?
They lost six of their brothers, right?
Right. So they lost some of their colleagues in the 9/11 incident. They fly the thin red flag as a remembrance of those folks, as well as anyone else they've lost in the line of duty. And they receive a complaint. It was attributed to Democratic Councilwoman Carlina Rivera, and although her office has come out and said she never made that complaint, which is you know what, that's fine. But again, it was said that the flag is too politically charged.
Fascist. What's the word? I mispronounced it.
Fascist.
Fascist. Thank you. That flag with the red line running through it is fascist. Now, Chris, if you follow that story, and this is where it just drives me nuts, it's bad enough you have absolute morons who forget about the over 300 fallen firefighters that didn't run from the World Trade Center towers, ran towards it, dunned on their gear, and ran up those fucking steps to try to save any possible person that they could find and locate. And unfortunately, and as devastating, they made the ultimate sacrifice. But what people need to understand and realize, the human toll, the fallout from 9/11, 23 years ago, almost 23 years ago, is still happening present day, because the men and women are so gravely ill from the exposure of what they were exposed to, trying to save lives and then work around the clock to try to locate people. They're dying each and every day from cancers. And this woman or someone or some people have the gall to suggest that a flag that was born out of 9/11, meaning that red line did not exist before 9/11. It was created as a memorial to 9/11. And this person decided to make this complaint. The appalling part of what compounded that is that the chief in the battalion at that station directed his people to remove the flag. And it was right. only after some pushback that the fire commissioner then changed and did an about face and then said, nope, it's okay to put it back on. The fact that that even happened right. in and of itself is telling you where we are in this world.
Well, Stu, we have gutless leaders
yep.
who won't stand up to the woke leftist BS. They won't stand up and fight. They will just take orders. And even though those orders are not beneficial, they'll do it anyway. The whole removal of the flag thing, I just think it's, again, another symptom of the decay in our society, the lack of, look at it this way. I look at our firefighters, our police officers. They are another set of warriors in our society, apart from our military warriors, right? But these are our warriors. And they're just nothing but demoralized, and they're nothing but spit on and disrespected. And the leadership just takes it.
Yeah,
I don't understand it. And look, I'm not in that man's shoes, so I hate to throw stones. But sitting here in the cheap seats watching this stuff, I'm glad that the actual fire commissioner said, no, you can fly the flag. Somebody showed a little bit of, just a little bit balls. Of fortitude.
How about a little balls? He finally yeah. had a set of balls to stand up to this cancel culture and said, you know what? That's bullshit. And I'm going to do an about face.
Well, what I'm glad is that because somebody filed the complaint, somebody else had the fortitude to say, too bad. Don't look at it. Right. And that's how it used to be. And especially in the state of New York and in the city of New York City, you know, you get a quick kiss my ass if, you know, you yeah. right now it's people just cower in fear that somebody made a complaint instead of saying too bad. It's your problem.
And Chris, again, because I'm going back to what I said at the beginning, mm-hmm. the implications to our kids right. is, well, right. maybe the American flag is not patriotic. Maybe it represents something that, ooh, it doesn't make me feel good, or my teacher or my, coach. Yeah, dad, maybe it's not what it used to be. No, the fucking problem is it's not what it used to be. It's because fucking assholes that are like in New York City say, take the fucking flag off the fire truck. Yeah. That's why it's not what it used to be.
Well, because we haven't made it what it should be and what it was.
Yep.
Exactly. It's our fault, right? We allowed this to happen. Yeah. So, again, another symptom of our societal decay. I'm glad that somebody did the right thing, though, finally.
Yeah, me too.
Hey, let's talk. Like I said, we got a lot of good stuff tonight. Let's talk a little bit about some current events, a little bit of our current...
Are you going to lower my blood pressure, or this is going to elevate it more?
I might keep you at an elevated level. Let's talk about the presidential proclamation, 31 March 2024. It will be Trans Visibility Day on the same day as Easter Sunday. Now, let me throw a few items in there, and then we can go off to the races.
Go ahead.
Now, I know that 31 March back in 2009 was designated as Trans Visibility Day. Now, Easter being the holiday that it is, never really has a fixed date. It moves on the calendar, and this year it happened to coincide with the 31st of March. So, you know, that they knew this was going to happen. They put out a proclamation, even though now the president is out there saying he didn't do it, even though there was a proclamation from the White House with his name on it. Let me tell you, just for context, you know, looking at social media and everything else, it's kind of a show of disrespect for the Christian community at large, right? I mean, this is the holiest, if not the second holiest day, depending on who you talk about, either Christmas or Easter for the Christian community. And could have definitely done a solid for everybody. Just said, hey, I'm going to move Trans Visibility Day to the 30th, you know, in observance of Easter Sunday. I think that would have really been a good gesture on his part, but he pandered to his far left base, alienated the Christian population, at least throughout the U.S., if not around the globe. And I think it's just more evidence of how our U.S. leadership position in the world is failing. One last point before I'm just winding you up a little here, Stu, but according to some reports, there are already 145 days on the calendar, our calendar, that are dedicated to the recognition, celebration, or visibility of the LGBTQ and then all the other, you know, subcomponents of that community. So, again, big kick in the shins for the Christian community. What do you got on that, Stu?
You know, Chris, and the hate mail, I can hear it coming. You know, Chris, there's over 330 million people that live in the United States. And I think, there's less than 7% that are identifying as being trans. Who cares?
Much less.
All right, whatever. Yeah. It's 1.6 million. Who cares? Look, I go to a store, Starbucks, Apple, wherever. There's a person behind the counter that is trans. I make my purchase. I use my debit card, and I'm on my way. And I can identify, at least through my own eyes, that that person seemingly is a trans. Okay, I don't have a problem with it. And the person who's trans, who's going through their transgender, doesn't have a problem with me. Because, Chris, I don't give a shit. Now, if that person gave me shitty service, maybe I would make a complaint or say, hey, that was kind of rude. I wouldn't be attacking that person because they're a trans. I would be attacking that person, so to speak, because they're just an obnoxious or rude or bad at their job.
Right.
Why is this something that has to be rammed down my throat? It is something that, quite frankly, I don't think anybody really cares about. What I know most people want is to be able to go about their lives and live within their bubble and be carefree and be safe and be prosperous and be healthy. I don't care if you're trans. Who cares? And I'll just turn the tables on you because you always do this quote-unquote lightning round. What does 39.6% mean to you?
To me?
Yes.
Is that the amount of people in the U.S. that claim to be Christians?
No, sir. Over 130 million people in the United States are obese. Are obese.
All right.
They have issues with their weight. Why don't we have Obese Visibility Day?
No, I mean, it won't be long.
I mean, listen, at least we could be targeting or identifying a health issue, because the United States of America is a fat nation. In fact, if you look at the statistics, when you take away what defines obesity and then you just back off and tend to identify what is being overweight, 60%, I think it's even higher than 60% of our population is overweight. Why don't we, you know, have, you know, Fat People Visibility Day, so at least we can identify that maybe we should, you know, do something, you know, to help each other out when it comes to that. I mean, Chris, let me just tell you, do you know who Dr. Rachel Levine is? She's the Assistant Secretary to Health. Now, look, there's no mistaking, it's a transgender. That person at one point was a man. She is now a transgender. She came out and was so outraged by the uproar that Transgender Visibility Day happened to fall on Easter. And she was appalled and incensed by the uproar. I mean, again, Chris, I just believe everybody wants to live their life in their little bubble. No one wants to be picked on. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, because I know what someone may be thinking, well, you know, these people may be picked on or they're targeted for the way they look or the way they behave. Look, ladies and gentlemen, at any point and any given time, any person can be the target of anti-Semitic behavior, racist type of behavior, discriminatory behavior. None of us are immune from at one point or one time in our lives being picked on. But this idea that I have to go out of my way and try to recognize this small population of our society and somehow make them feel extra special, Chris, I don't get it.
Well, I think it's from my perspective, it's the kind of the mouse that roared here, right? They are a very small part of our society, yet our federal government and the rest of our nation has made this the front and center issue for everything. It doesn't matter what it is. There's some sort of a trans, LGBT, whatever it has to do something with something. It's become the current social wedge that is used for every issue now to create divisiveness. And it's just a shame that the government functions themselves are actually promoting that divisiveness. And I'll tell you, Stu, I think that like anything else, you know, people are people. When you saturate them with something and you force something on them, they don't like it. So when you take this movement of trans and LGBT stuff, everybody was fine with it before. Nobody had a problem with it. But the government made it a problem. The government made it a wedge issue to divide communities. Did you see where New York, the Governor Hochul, she had all of the New York State landmarks on Easter.
Yeah, she lit them up.
Decorated with the LGBT trans flag colors on Easter Sunday, to include Niagara Falls and the Trade Center. And I'm thinking, I don't know if that was what we all needed. Right.
Again, so, it's activists. It's activists. These are not people that are the voice of their constituencies. They're just activists because they're pushing and in trying to indoctrinate some bullshit agenda.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah, well. So, yeah. But I mean, that's kind of current events right there. I mean, it was kind of the uproar over the weekend. But
well deserved, by the way.
Yeah, if we're done on that one, let's talk about some changing, like some other government perspectives that are changing. What do we got on this tragedy where we had the NYPD officer, the Jonathan Diller, was killed by, you know, we had talked about it previously about with that just piece of garbage, 21 arrests, 9 felonies, and he's out walking around among us. The current president visits New York City at the same time they're doing the wake for the fallen officer, and the president declines to participate or meet with the family while he's in the same state. Instead, he goes to a fundraising event.
Yep.
So.
And by the way, he and Barack Obama was also there, just so we are clear.
And I think so was Bill Clinton. Yeah. I think it was a real party that day. So
Chris, let me tell you this from my own experience, you know, working in the op center in New York at 26 Federal Plaza, you know, when the president, whoever the president was at that particular time, when I was assigned to the op center, there was a task force that was assembled in anticipation of the president through the Secret Service. It'd be the FBI, the Secret Service, United States Marshal Service, ATF, you name it. Every federal agency was at a command post because especially in New York, that presents a very, very challenging set of logistics, because you have obviously the land, you have the thoroughfares and the streets and the highways, you have the seaports, you have the rivers, you have the Long Island Sound, and then of course you have the airspace. And in New York, you have, you know, multiple airports within a small radius. And so it really is an incredible accomplishment. And I do always hold the Secret Service in such a tremendous high regard, because the way they, you know, orchestrate this and put this together is incredible. So with understanding what goes into the logistics of getting a president in and out of the, New York is incredible. And I would agree that I don't expect that when, for example, when a police officer, unfortunately, such as Jonathan Diller, the 31-year-old father, husband, who gets shot and killed by some piece of garbage, that I would not expect that is required that each and every time the president of the United States would have to attend a fallen police officer. I'm not saying that. But how dare he be in New York City within a short car ride, which crosses over the multiple jurisdictions that he had to traverse to get to New York City, whether by helicopter or vis-a-vis through his motorcade, that this guy, this president of ours, snubs the family and doesn't make it a priority to go and pay his respects. And ladies and gentlemen, again, I'm going to say this. What is the implications? What are the optics? What is it that our children are perceiving and thinking when a president who is there snubs a fallen cop's family? What's the message we're sending to our young people?
I'll tell you what it is, Stu. It's that the death of a police officer is no longer important. That's how I see it. And again, it shows the lack of honor, and it shows the lack of discipline of the chief executive of this country, that they're more worried about going to a fundraiser. They're more worried about other peripheral issues rather than taking a little bit of time. He is the president of the United States. If he was going to be a little bit late, I'm sure they would have been okay to start without him, and they would have held everything for him.
But as you have seen, Chris, it's okay for him to fucking selectively pick his puppets at his State of the Union dresses, right? So, you know, when he's getting up in front of you know, Congress just a month ago, you know, he selectively picks his pawns because he wants to, you know, showcase this particular person of what they have done or what has happened to them. That's all bullshit. That's all scripted. But real life tragedy, this son of a bitch couldn't find fucking 15 minutes out of his day to go pay his respects.
Well, here's another thing that I think is kind of reprehensible. The former POTUS, number 45, Trump, attends the wake, meets with the family, speaks at the service, and then he's attacked by the media for doing so. And, you know, I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable that, you know, that that's the state we're in right now. Oh, by the way, I heard that the President Biden, they were able to raise $25 million. So congratulations to them on that. Yeah, but, you know, you mentioned something that was interesting as a point. Is, you know, should the POTUS be required to acknowledge every time a law enforcement officer is killed in the line of duty? And I don't think that's probably required. And I don't think that that should be something the president of the United States is involved with. Now, if he's in the vicinity and the officer was killed as a result of an adversarial action, like what we saw for Officer Diller, then I think the POTUS, even if he can't make it in person, he should make a phone call. To date, from what I understand, he still hasn't contacted the family.
Yeah. Well, it's shameful. It's just shameful. And then, of course, you have the governor herself who tried to show up at the same wake. And rightfully so. There's where, ladies and gentlemen, you really saw human interaction, like the real emotion of people who are suffering. They came out and they said, lady, we recognize you're the governor of the state of New York, but you are not welcome here. And ladies and gentlemen, that's raw emotion. You know, I mean, that's real life. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, we've all had tragedy befall us, and everybody deals with it in their own way. And I just think that was so important to capture and show, okay, the governor, she probably thought, you know, she would do, quote unquote, the right thing and show up. But you know what? The family said, lady, not at the expense of us. We are not your political pawns. We're not going to be used for your bullshit so that you can try to suggest that you're pro-law enforcement and you support us. Because to the contrary, she's done everything to erode the confidence of the New York City Police Department and has done everything to erode, you know, law and order within the city, which is compounded by, quite frankly, a mayor who can't get out of his own way. So there you have it.
Hey, she showed up. She tried to do the right thing in her own mind. The family wasn't having any of it, which, again, I think it's starting to show some of the frustration with the current way of things and the current political environment. People they're done with it.
Yeah.
So while, you know, uncomfortable, I think, you know, the family probably did the right thing for themselves. We'll get into one last area here for the, our just to how our government is just off the tracks. But you see this thing where when we're talking about the symptoms in society, about how things are really just upside down. The right, you had that whole situation with Riley Gaines, you know, collegiate swimmer, forced to compete against a male trans person.
Yep.
And I guess now we have one of the California state senators, his name's Scott Wiener, I'm not sure which one he goes by, but I guess he came out with a whole factually incorrect, you know, report on this, trying to, you know, kind of demonize Riley Gaines and why is she against these trans people and everything else. So, you know, even our own elected officials right now are just so just infected with this wokeness and left-leaning garbage that, Stu, I'm telling you, I'm worried. I don't know if we're going to recover from it.
Listen, and I agree with you. And by the way, I think Caitlyn Jenner, God bless her. I think she's incredible for all of us. And I'll tell you why. Because there you have a person who has gone through to change her biological identity to a woman. But she is steadfast in saying she believes it is cheating for a man to participate in a woman's sport. And why is she able to say that? Is because she knows what it's like to train and dedicate her entire life to sports to the level that she was able to achieve during the Olympics. And so she understands the blood, sweat, and tears. And this idiot Wiener, who probably can't even, you know, punch his way out of a paper bag, who the fuck is he to now suggest that he knows better and that it should be okay for a boy or a man to participate in a woman's sport? It's just, it's bullshit. It's garbage. And again, it's another example of this person in a position of authority, an elected official who is nothing more than an activist at this point, right? He's just pushing his own fucking personal agenda. He's not speaking for the populace. He's not speaking for the average Joe or for the majority. He just thinks, oh, this is a good agenda for me personally, and because I'm an activist, and I'll push this bullshit. And again, What's the message we're saying, sending to our young kids? Again, these kids, they're all processing this. They're all taking this all in. And what's going to happen to these kids when they have to think for themselves?
Well, what we're doing, Stu, is we're making this type of behavior and these positions, we're making them the new normal.
Yeah, well,
for the kids. So just a terrible shame. Hey, look, talking about society, let's talk a little bit about law enforcement and society. I've been seeing multiple reports recently, and kind of comes back to our previous organization, but there's a series of reports about the FBI interviewing citizens at their homes because of internet posts that these people made. The FBI is showing up at their front door and starting to ask them questions, conduct an interview, so to speak. So, you know, I'm thinking about this and I'm thinking back, okay, when I was still with the organization, why would we interact with the public? Because there's a certain balance of keeping a good relationship with the public. And even when you went out to do interviews, right, you're there to either gather information, clarify or amplify things that you knew in a case, you know, maybe look for some new leads. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what the purpose or intent is right now of FBI agents going out to people's homes because they may say something on a social media site, you know, and they leave it public. And now the FBI shows up at your house. And I don't know. I don't know if that's a good way to for the FBI to go. What do you think on that?
Well, first of all, you know, our First Amendment right to be free to speak our mind and to vocalize our opinions and our thoughts. I think it is probably our most important fundamental right. And it really does, to a large extent, separate us from most of the world because we are guaranteed that fundamental right in our Constitution. I say to people, look, it is one thing to have a private conversation with a person or people in a private setting where someone is not taking notes or someone is not recording it or videotaping it. And certainly that is true when people have Facebook or Instagram or X or whatever your social media platform is. When you publicize that, and ladies and gentlemen, let me digress for a moment. I know what a lot of you are going to say. Well, but you know, my Facebook page is private or my Instagram page is private. No, if you have other people that have authorization to interact with you or engage you because they're in your circle of trust, that's a public forum. You may think it's a private forum, but if you post something to someone else, you do give up that right to privacy, that person potentially could take that information and run with it. And I just say to people, look, if you don't want the FBI to come knocking on your door because you're posting threatening or signs of you may be in a position to carry out the next mass murder or the next mass shooting or whatever it is, I would say don't publish that and don't put that out there because the FBI, and Chris, let's talk about this. You know, after 9/11, the FBI realized to a large extent we were caught flat-footed, meaning there was mm-hmm. so much information that was out there. The FBI just had no way to correlate and cross-reference this information. And ladies and gentlemen, really what happened was the information was compartmentalized and the intelligence agencies and the law enforcement agencies were not sharing the information seamlessly. And that's why, to a certain extent, they were able to carry out the 9/11 attacks. Now, with saying that, and I speak, for example, there are often times that the FBI has missed certain cues, and maybe one of the worst ones in recent times, unfortunately, was during the Parkland shooting at Parkland High School, where Nicholas Cruz was known to the FBI as well as known to other law enforcement agencies. And just unfortunately, it fell through the cracks and no one paid him mind or paid enough attention to him. And unfortunately, on that particular day, on a Valentine's Day, he carried out, you know, a horrific mass shooting in that high school and killed, obviously, these innocent children and the teachers and the coaches. But with that being said, I know, Chris, I'll put my lawyer hat on, because I know a lot of people are offended by the fact that the FBI would come knocking on your door. You know, ladies and gentlemen, from the legal perspective, one of the most fundamental rights that we also enjoy, aside from the First Amendment, is the Fifth and Sixth Amendment. And that means that no one can compel us to give a statement against ourselves, meaning that if a cop comes and knocks on the door, you can answer the door and say, "How you doing? Who are you?" "I'm Special Agent Stuart Kaplan." "Oh, nice to meet you, but I'm not interested in speaking to you." And you can close the door. That is your constitutionally protected right. And so, you know, there's a balancing act here.
Absolutely. You know, I'll tell you this. It's just an interesting, you know, trend that's beginning. But right now, as you've heard in our previous conversations, as well as in the news media, we're in a heightened threat environment because of world events, as well as the current state of our southern border. And the government's watching. They're watching social media posts. They're watching social media platforms. They're trying to be predictive and preventative in this high threat environment. So I would just, as a public service announcement, if you're going to use what's considered to be inflammatory or threatening language, be careful, because there's a lot of vigilance right now. They're looking to prevent any acts of terrorism or violence, and you may get a visit. So I'll finish with this, Stu. You have to decide when the FBI or other law enforcement comes to your door, one, whether you want to speak to them or not, right? I mean, you can, like Stu said, you have the right to remain silent, right? And you have the right to stop talking at any time. So, you know, your Fifth Amendment is very important. But here's the other thing is, from my perspective, having formerly been in the business, Stu, you were in the business as well. Do you think you can resolve the issue by talking to them, or do you think you're going to further exacerbate an issue? My advice to people is if you're not sure, you may just want to not participate until you have a good idea what you want to do.
Yeah, I mean, and you're always have the option of telling, you know, the people on the other side of the door, "Hey, look, I'm not comfortable. I want to consult with an attorney, or I just want to think about it, and I'll leave your business card and I may call you back." You know, but Chris, I want to also distinguish, just because this is such a hot topic, you know, ladies and gentlemen, you know, the Bureau or the FBI or the Secret Service going out and knocking on someone's door because they're doing a potential threat assessment, because you've posted something where there's an indication that you may carry out the next active shooting scenario, I don't have a problem with, quite frankly. And I think, listen, if you're one of those idiots, you know, that post pictures on your Facebook with you carrying and, you know, holding an AR-15 and espousing, you know, stupidity, you know what? You deserve to have the ATF or the FBI, whoever, come knock on your door. Because I just
think, not only do you deserve it, you can expect it.
Exactly. And I have no problem with that.
Right.
However, there is a distinction of the FBI colluding with social media and trying to suppress our fundamental right to have free thought. Meaning, if I was against the vaccine because I just felt that it wasn't medically proven, or it just wasn't the sound advice, or I just thought I had better information or better knowledge, the intentional suppression of the process of thinking freely, that's where the FBI crosses the line, as well as any other agency. And so I just want to distinguish that if you're outspoken in connection with, you know, whatever's going on in your community, and it is not, you know, because you're not being a menace or a threat, I don't think the FBI is within their right, nor should they, because I think it really, it sets them up to really look unprofessional. I think they erode the confidence and the integrity in what the FBI is supposed to represent. And certainly the FBI should not be used as a tool for local law enforcement or for a school board or for a council board to try to use them as a way of intimidating someone because they're outspoken. That's where I say the line is crossed.
Yeah. Hey, supplemental public service announcement. Always ask people to see their credentials or ID when they come up representing themselves as law enforcement. They will always, the policy is they will identify themselves, and always make sure that if they want to enter your home and you're not comfortable, that they have a warrant.
Yep.
Okay.
Chris, so, 4 minutes left, less than four
all right,
minutes.
Buddy. Let me hit a couple of speed round items for you, and then we'll do the gratitude and closing, and we'll get this one done.
All right.
So, all right. Kind of touched on this one a little bit earlier, but how many Christians, people who identify as Christians in the United States? It's still the predominant religion in the United States. You had a number before, but why don't you hit me with it again, Stu?
I would say that, and this is coming from the Jew from the Jew for Jesus, so to speak. Let's just say there's 330 million people here in the United States, and that represents the populace. I would say there are over 225 million Christians in the United States.
That's a pretty good guess. We're looking at between 60 to 70% of the population. So you're looking about, you know, between 210, 220.
All right.
That was a very good guess. Just as a counterbalance, the trans community is between 0.5 to 1.6% of the population overall, according to PolitiFact. The UCLA Williams Institute has it at about 0.6% of the population. So here's another one. How many Christians are there across the world?
Wow. Oof. I would say that there are 1.5 billion Christians.
A little light on that one, Stu. You're looking here at about 30% of the world population identifies as being part of the Christian-based faith. So you're looking at about 2.3 billion Christians.
Right. Okay.
So again, counterbalance fact here. We're looking at for the Islamic world, they're about 24% of the world population, about 1.8 billion.
Okay.
And the trans population around the world, again, they can only do certain numbers because it's by, you know, how people identify, but they say it's less than 1%.
So,
interesting. To go back to this weekend's controversy about the Easter holiday, how long have Christians been celebrating Easter?
Since the birth of Christ. I don't know. Again, setup question for me.
No, since the second century.
All right.
Is when they started, when they formalized it, set that time period up for Lent and everything.
Okay.
That came later, but that's when they started observing it. Transvisibility Day, as we mentioned earlier, started in March 31st of 2009. So, quick speed round tonight. Let me move into some gratitude and closing. The gratitude, I'll do a couple of things, and then I'll give you the last word, Stu. Maybe your blood pressure will be down a little bit by now. You can close out on a more level note. So again, as always, we want to make sure we thank everyone who keeps us safe every day, who takes care of us, our military, law enforcement, first responders, everybody who keeps our great cities running, our medical, power, sanitation, construction folks, everybody else. Condolences to the family and the loved ones and the friends of the departed NYPD officer, Jonathan Diller. It's another sad and disappointing end of watch due to an adversarial action. And saw this one, Stu, and this one grabbed me a little bit because I think it shows how we're having a passing of the guard. But a gentleman named Lou Conter passed away. He was 102 years old. And he was the final survivor from the USS Arizona that was attacked during Pearl Harbor.
Wow.
He retired from the Navy in 1967.
Amazing.
And he was a lieutenant commander. And my only thing when I saw that was, is we are losing that greatest generation of hard, tough, patriotic Americans who fought for our freedom and peace around the world. Condolences to that family as well. And I'll give you the last words to...
You know, Chris, all I'll tell you is, and I mean this to everyone that's going to listen to this podcast, is, you know, we all have had loss in our lives. We've all lost people that are very close to us. And I can tell you that when a soldier is fallen, they drape the coffin in the American flag. And when that flag is presented to the family, it's a symbol of really something that the family can cherish as almost as the soul of that fallen soldier. And if we all think about someone who was very close to us, you know, whether it was a child or an aunt or a grandmother or a father or a mother, I think we could all admit that there's a symbol of something they had. Whether it was a child, it may have been their teddy bear, or in my case, my father, it was his money clip, or my mother, it was something else. I could go on and on, and I think we all can relate to why some object somehow brings us comfort. Ladies and gentlemen, the United States flag is our soul for all of us to be the United States of America. This is the greatest country on the planet. And that flag symbolizes all of us in a united front. It is a living, breathing object to represent all of the people who have made the ultimate sacrifice for all of us. And it should always represent the United States of America with honor and dignity, and we all should show the appropriate respect for what it represents. And ladies and gentlemen, I ask you to just think about that. We are living in a country that, quite frankly, takes itself for granted. Our political leaders, some of them have clearly lost their moral compass. They don't give a shit for any of us. They only care for themselves. Most of them, quite frankly, are in it because they want to line their pockets. And the one thing that can unite all of us is the symbol of that American flag. Please, ladies and gentlemen, let us never let that flag be a symbol of discourse or dishonor or burning in the streets or something other than what it is. It should symbolize all of us living here together, one nation under God. God bless you, Chris. Thank you.
You too, Stu, and you have a great night, and look forward to us getting together again next week.